after President Trump warned of fire and fury if North Korea continued its nuclear weapons testing and threats, North Korea announced today it is drawing up plans to fire 4 missiles over Japan towards the U.S. territory of Guam. So now what? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Do you approve or disapprove of how President Trump is dealing with North Korea? Are the strong words a show of strength, or does it escalate the tension? Do you think North Korea is an imminent threat? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Robert Ross, a professor of political science at Boston College. He's an associate at Harvard University's John King Fairbanks Center for Chinese Studies. His research focuses on Chinese and East Asian security. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Now I will say good morning. Now that I have your button on, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much. So, what is your reaction to North Korea saying that it's going to draw up plans and they'll have them ready by mid-August on sending some missiles toward Guam?
Well, the United States and North Korea have been in a fairly active exchange of threats back and forth. We expect our threats to compel North Korea to back down, but North Korea responds to our threats with their own threats, which is perfectly expected. And so their next step up the ladder of escalation was to say, you continue this, we're prepared to launch missiles close to Guam. You know, we shouldn't simply expect that because we increase our threats, other countries are going to say, well, now we'll be nice to the United States. Indeed, the more we threaten them, the more they believe they need nuclear weapons. So that's about where we are now.
Yeah, well, let's take a listen to President Trump using very strong language against North Korea on Tuesday when he said North Korea's president has been very threatening and promised strong action.
They will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
So that wasn't just a knock it off.
Mm.
I mean, that's pretty strong. That's pretty strong language to say.
Well, yeah, and if you were North Korea, you might assume that there was a level of bluff in here because he's basically saying that they will do to North Korea more than what we did to Nagasaki and Hiroshima in World War II. And I think if President Trump had consulted with his advisors before making those comments, he would have thought better, because I think South Korea would object strongly to putting nuclear radiation on the Korean Peninsula, the fallout over South Korea and Seoul. So I think the president believes that our prior presidents have not been tough enough. And so by talking tougher, we can get more action. But in the real world, we call this cheap talk. Talk is cheap, and actions speak louder than words, and the actions he's threatening are just not credible.
Yeah. So is this a responsible way to address North Korea?
Well, again, this is the fourth administration to deal with the North Korean nuclear problem. We go back to President Clinton on this. Each president has had a crisis. Each president has tried to use coercive threats to compel North Korea to change its policy, and each president has failed. I think many are coming to the realization that North Korea is determined to have a nuclear program, and there's not every problem in the world the United States can solve, and if a country's determined to have a nuclear program, they're going to have it. And at some point, you're going to have to simply come to grips with the reality that a regime you don't like and may be destabilizing has a capability that, should it be used, would be devastating. And you need to find alternative ways to manage this problem. Many in South Korea and many in China believe the long-term solution to this is not military threats and our use of force. The long-term solution is gradual evolution of the regime into a more acceptable form of government. Policy we've been pursuing recently with Cuba, we pursue with other countries. America needs to get into North Korea with its values, with its democratic political values, with its economic system, begin to help the North Korean people distance themselves from their leadership and to promote better government and better foreign policy. This is a nuclear power. Any effort to persuade them otherwise has failed. And at some point, you have to accept failure. To continue doing a policy that doesn't work is really a sign of insanity. And that's what we've been doing for four administrations.
So U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the threat from North Korea is unchanged. And he said we should there's no imminent threat and that we should sleep well at night. What's your assessment?
Well, I think he means a few things there. One, North Korea still does not have the ability to place a missile with a warhead on the United States. And so in that regard, the threat has not changed. Second, I think he's saying that our ability to deter North Korea with the threat of overwhelming retaliation remains intact. Indeed, it's important to remember that our retaliatory threats, our deterrent capability, is as robust as ever. Secretary of Defense Mattis was correct to say that North Korea would not survive an American retaliatory attack. And the North Korean leadership's number one objective is to stay in power. And so they would not want to elicit that kind of retaliation. And we assume the North Korean leadership is maybe diplomatically challenged, you might say, but nonetheless understands the cost benefits of risking war with the United States and does not want to do that. So he's expressing confidence in our deterrent capability as well. He should. I think most people believe North Korea will not start a war. The purpose of their capabilities is to defend themselves, not to risk the war with the most powerful country in the world.
Yeah. What is North Korea capable of with its nuclear weapons? Wasn't there a new development that indicated it had a nuclear warhead that could go on a missile?
Yes. There's a recent report that our intelligence agencies believe that North Korea has miniaturized its nuclear warhead, so it can now fit on a missile that can reach the United States. Perhaps they have, but nonetheless, this has never been tested, either with a nuclear test or on a missile. We don't know whether their missiles can actually survive re-entry in the atmosphere. So for all these reasons, we do not believe they have that capability. But I want to emphasize that very few people believe North Korea, even if they had this capability, would want to start a war, because the difference in capabilities between our two countries is so great, and American credibility, our reputation to respond is so strong that they understand that would be suicidal.
Yeah. So if North Korea doesn't want to start a war, why is it lobbing missiles all over the place?
Well, it's fair to say that North Korea is one of the most vulnerable and insecure countries in the world. Their economy is one of the worst in the world. Their military relies on 1960s technology. They can't buy weapons anywhere. They can't buy steel anywhere. Their people hate their government, and they have no allies in the world. The United States, China, the Soviet Union, and now Russia abandoned them a long time ago. And the most powerful country in the world has on many occasions suggested that the only alternative is regime change. That's a precarious existence, if you will, where you believe the most powerful country in the world wants you eliminated, as the United States did to the leadership of Libya, as we did to the leadership of Yugoslavia, as we did to the leadership of Iraq. And they may honestly believe, with good reason, that they may be next. And in those circumstances, if your number one objective is survive, nuclear weapons make sense. Other countries in the world facing similar circumstances have sought nuclear weapons. Having said that, they need to prove that such a weak country as themselves have the resolve to risk war with the United States. Otherwise, the United States may say, hey, you know, they're vulnerable, they're weak, and they'll never retaliate, so therefore we should eliminate the regime. So they have an interest in threatening us to show that they're as ready for war as we are. Having said all that, we should remember this is nonetheless a diplomatically challenged leadership. They're doing everything possible to follow a security policy that at one level may make sense, that is nuclear weapons, but at the same time provoke the United States and make us into the most adversarial country possible. They seem to have no ability whatsoever to influence other countries to have a better view of themselves, have no ability to moderate their international relations. And the result is that the threat to North Korea actually increases. as we see today with the response of President Trump, Secretary of Defense Mattis, and others.
We are talking with Robert Ross, a professor of political science at Boston College, about the escalating tension, the war of words between the U.S. and North Korea. Now, North Korea says it is drawing up plans to send 4 missiles towards the U.S. territory of Guam. North Korea also criticized President Donald Trump as being bereft of reason. So, how do you view this situation? Do you approve or disapprove of the way President Trump is handling the situation with North Korea? What questions do you have for our guest? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the escalating tension between North Korea and the United States. North Korea today saying it is planning on sending 4 missiles towards the U.S. territory of Guam. This came after President Trump tweeted yesterday that the U.S. nuclear arsenal was stronger and more powerful than ever before. Earlier this week, a couple of days ago, President Trump warned of fire and fury if North Korea continued with its missile tests and threats. So we're wondering what happens now, whether this standoff is just a war of words or if it's more than that. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your thoughts. We're welcoming your whether or not you approve or disapprove of the way President Trump is handling the situation with North Korea. 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you. We have a bunch of comments on Facebook, but open lines. So do you approve or disapprove of the way President Trump is handling the nuclear threat from North Korea? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Or don't you consider it a threat? Robert Ross is a professor of political science at Boston College. He is an associate at Harvard University's John King Fairbanks Center for Chinese Studies. His research focuses on China and East Asian security. All right, now our lines are filling up. I knew that would happen. Travis on Facebook says, Kim Jong-un only understands blunt talk. Trump warned him that if he keeps threatening us, he would get fire and fury like the world has never seen. Guess what? President Truman said virtually the same thing to Japan. Well, what's your reaction to that, Professor Ross, that North Korea only understands blunt talk?
Well, blunt talk in the end is still just talk. And leaders don't put much faith in talk unless you can back it up with actions. So, yes, Harry Truman did back it up. But we should recall that Japan did not have a similar capability to retaliate. It is simply inconceivable that the President of the United States would drop nuclear bombs on North Korea and devastate South Korea and American soldiers and American lives in Seoul. If presidents were serious about doing things, one would hope they would be in the Situation Room of the White House rather than playing golf on his golf course. What appears to be reckless on the president's part by playing golf and making nuclear threats simply undermines his credibility even further. Tough talk is nice, but every president before him in this situation has backed down before using force, understanding that North Korea's own retaliatory capabilities could impose a high cost. His own generals, are suggesting that the military options are very few and very limited and very constrained, contrary to President Trump's own statements. I would trust his military advisors on this rather than his own inexperience.
Mary from Madison called. She says she doesn't think that President Trump is good at communicating with North Korea, but wonders why the UN can't negotiate with Kim Jong-un to de-escalate the problem.
Well, I think there are two responses to that. One is that North Korea simply, in this particular crisis, the responsibility for de-escalation will fall on the two parties. And it's not particularly difficult. We've de-escalated in the past. You simply stop making threats and you give yourself a period of calm. You make a proposal that seems reasonable. The other side accepts it and you move on. It's not hard. We're not, neither side seems prepared to do that right now. The UN itself doesn't have much ability to do that because it's simply not a stakeholder. And its interest in these, in the outcome is minimal because, after all, it's not a country, it's not a state, it doesn't have a population, doesn't have an economy. The country with the most ability to bring the two sides together to the table would be China. And China has been advising the United States over time that military threats are ineffective and certainly insufficient by themselves, and you also need to talk to North Korea. So the United States is ready to talk to de-escalate, which is what the Bush administration did when it found itself in a similar circumstance, and what the Clinton administration did in a similar situation. The United States is ready to talk. China can broker that agreement.
Let's go to Brian in Waukesha next. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Yes, what do you think, or what's your question?
Well, I was looking at, I was watching a press club interview of, I think it was a general of the Army, and he was talking about how there were no good options, but it's time to make a choice. And it seems like if North Korea's already got their weapons and all the other options to either get him to give up the nuclear weapons seem to have failed, what about getting him to do certain things like show us, like free press in your country, show us that you can be a responsible owner of nuclear weapons and not just a nutcase. Maybe we get free press and, you know, rather than regime change, we, you know, bring the free press and into North Korea, and maybe he can show that he's rational and he can just join the community of everybody else who has nuclear weapons.
So how likely might that be, Professor Ross?
Well, many Americans are thinking that the next stage in this process is to get our foot in the door, like we've done with Cuba and other countries, and play the long game here. And the Chinese are doing that with border trade. The South Koreans have done that intermittently with what they call the Sunshine Policy to try and bring capitalism, economic modernization, development, consumerism to the North Korean people and to begin to put pressure on the North Korean regime to open up and be more responsible. We should understand, of course, that this is a long-term process. There are no quick fixes here. But given the alternative, it seems the best option, because failure has been the outcome of the prior three administrations, and this is now a nuclear power. It's difficult for the United States to do when you made your policy premise on there shall be no nuclear weapons in North Korea. To do an about-face would undermine the confidence of other countries in the region, of America's commitment to their security. We need to find a way to do this. It is not healthy for East Asia, for the United States, to have this kind of leadership have nuclear weapons. And we need to get our foot in the door to begin to change that system.
Now, Brian also mentioned to my producer that he wondered if President Trump, after making comments like fire and fury like the world has never seen, can Trump be diplomatic now and save face?
Well, President Trump has shown the ability to change his policy on multiple occasions and suggest that nothing is different. Of course, he's done this with health care. He's done this with China. He's done this on a number of occasions. And on top of that, when the imperative of a crisis begins to put pressure on you, you can find ways to change. He can claim victory and move on to conversations. This is what diplomats do, and he'll have to find a way to do this. And of course, we hope he will find a way to do this. At the same time, minimize suspicion that America has simply been backed down before North Korean bluffs. This is what diplomats are for, to try and find ways to develop policy that are at least detrimental. He hasn't shown much faith in his own diplomats, but we hope he'll learn from this experience.
Thank you, Brian, for the call. You know, Brian made reference to Kim Jong-un as being crazy. Can we, and thought that maybe if he'd let free press into the country and people could monitor him, that maybe it would be okay if North Korea had these nuclear weapons. I mean, can we trust the leadership in North Korea to be responsible with its nuclear capabilities?
Well, it's interesting the last few days. The North Koreans have done a number of things that suggest that they're trying to manage this risk. One, they said they would launch nuclear weapons close to Guam. Well, that was not an accident to say close to Guam. We're not going to kill Americans, but we'll let you know what we can do. And now we have a recent announcement that the North Koreans have released a Canadian citizen that they have held. So they're saying, look, we were really nice to Canada. They said to South Korea, we have nothing against you. So they're trying to divide our allies and persuade these countries that America's a problem, not North Korea. So it's, perhaps they're crazy, but they're crazy like a fox. They know what they're doing out there. Can we trust them? Well, no, I wouldn't trust anyone out there. But having said that, we don't have much faith in their control, command and control over nuclear weapons. We don't have much faith that they have a leader who can be moderate and prudent. But we do have faith that they want to survive. This is a regime that has been in power longer than any communist party in the world, and they want to keep it that way. And picking a fight with the United States, starting a war, is a sure recipe for suicide. Will they let in democracy? No, because they understand that the more their own people learn about the world, the more they're going to turn on their own government, and that's frightening to them. And that's one of the dilemmas they face. How do you reform without bringing down your own system? That's why China, South Korea, and perhaps the United States needs to be on the ground, not working with the North Korean government, but working with the North Korean people to create a situation in which the choices of the North Korean government are not good, and reform is the only answer.
Thank you, Brian. Mark in Franklin is with us now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Obviously, I'm bothered by the entire thing that's happening over there. It's a potential threat to the United States, but I'm also bothered by the lack of media coverage about this. This just didn't happen in the last 6 months. This guy didn't develop nuclear weapons. He didn't develop ICBMs in 6 months. Where's the press been on this for the last 10 or 20 years? You hear every now and then you might hear a story and then it's gone. So you think, oh, everything's okay. And now all of a sudden, the press is going, oh, this is terrible. What's Trump going to do about it? What has the U.S. done in 20 years? How did we let this happen?
Well, that's a very good question. The press has periodically covered it when we have a crisis. So it was the headline news during the Clinton administration in 1994. It was headline news in the Bush administration in 2003, on the Obama administration in 2010. And now it's headline news again. In the prior cases, after the crisis subsided, the media turned their attention to someone else. But it does show you that North Korea has been working on nuclear weapons now for nearly 30 years. It's taken them quite a long time. 20 years. It's taken them a long time to do this. It hasn't been overnight. Now, but the other part about it is that this is a new situation with the United States. The threat of North Korean nuclear weapons has been very real to South Korea all this time. But now the American president has to face the reality that North Korea may be able to place a nuclear weapon on the United States. And, of course, for both the American president, for the American people, and for the media, this is a very different situation. And this is one of the reasons it's now become such a high-profile issue for American diplomacy and for the media. Now we're vulnerable. We could ignore it in the past. We could pretend it didn't exist. We can't do that now. Yeah. And we need to come to grips with this now.
Well, what's your assessment on how President Obama, the Obama administration, handled this threat?
Well, that's a good question. The Obama administration's attitude was, we can't solve this problem. Every time we try and negotiate with North Korea, it failed. And so we end up negotiating with ourselves or rewarding North Korea with negotiations when we get nothing in return. So their attitude was, we can't fix this problem. We shouldn't even talk about it. We should ignore it. Well, the Trump administration found that to be unsatisfactory because the ballistic missile program, the nuclear program, continued. So now people are asking outside the administration, if it didn't work to ignore them and they're now a nuclear power, maybe it's simply time to talk to them. Not with the expectation that talking would resolve the problem and eliminate nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula, but talking might simply make it less likely that nuclear weapons would be used, and we can begin the process of reforming the North Korean government. Talking seems to be better than fighting. Talking seems to be better than threatening. When threatening and fighting don't seem to be able to resolve the problem.
Let's go to John in Green Bay now. Hi, John.
Good morning, all. Hey, I got a question about the anti-ballistic system. Are we able to shoot these things out of the sky? And what's the percentage of us being accurate on taking these things out of the sky as he fires them?
Do you know, Professor Ross?
Yes, that's a very relevant question. The answer is the likelihood we can do this is not good. For the most part, missile defense does not work. We've been working on this since the Reagan administration, and it's just very, very difficult. We've had a number of tests, and some tests have been successful and some haven't been. But these tests are done under ideal conditions. Everyone knows the test is coming. The military is prepared. The weather is fine. There are no decoys or distractions. And sometimes we succeed and sometimes we don't. More than that, the military understands that these interceptors are not perfect. So you need maybe 3 interceptors to have a confidence to hit 1 incoming missile. And that's not a very good ratio. And so the likelihood that Guam, for example, could shoot a North Korean missile out of the air is simply, it's unlikely. We hope for the best, but we're relying on a system that's been insufficiently tested, insufficiently developed, and prematurely deployed, maybe in a decade. But right now, the system's still untested.
Let's take one more call before a news break from Mark in Delavan. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I can hardly hear you, Joy. But what my comment was is that as we keep talking about the idea that North Korea has a crazy leader, and so we can't really trust him with nuclear weapons. But I think what this situation shows more than anything is that nobody should have nuclear weapons, because now the most powerful nation in the world has a crazy leader. And so the only thing that makes sense is to realize that this could happen to any country that has nuclear weapons, and so therefore it makes sense to just get rid of nuclear weapons altogether, which then comes the next step. When North Korea and America doesn't have nuclear weapons, what's to keep us from invading North Korea and creating regime change?
Boy, you only have a minute to get a start on an answer, Professor Ross.
Sure. One, of course, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Once there's the technology out there, no one will trust anyone else that they're not secretly building nuclear capabilities, so it's very difficult to disarm. But second, if you were North Korea and neither North Korea and the United States didn't have nuclear weapons, yes, the threat of American attack on North Korea with conventional weapons would still be devastating. So for North Korea, whether the United States has nuclear weapons or not is not significant in why they want nuclear weapons, because they need nuclear weapons to deal with America's overwhelming conventional superiority combined with our threat to overthrow the regime. So that, if you will, is the poor man's answer to conventional military inferiority, nuclear weapons.
We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will take more of your thoughts, your questions, your concerns about tensions rising with North Korea. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. North Korea says that it is drawing up plans to send 4 missiles toward the U.S. territory of Guam. This after President Trump warned of fire and fury if North Korea continued with its nuclear missile tests and threats. We are talking with a guest about this war of words, the escalating tensions, what happens now, and we are wondering if you have thoughts, questions, or concerns. Do you approve or disapprove of how President Trump is handling this situation? And why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with a guest professor about what is at stake. Robert Ross is a professor of political science at Boston College. He is an associate at Harvard University's John King Fairbanks Center for Chinese Studies. His research focuses on China and East Asian security. Todd in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Todd.
Hey, good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. My thinking about this was that more or less what he is doing, what Kim Il-sung is doing, is doing exactly what the Russians and the Chinese have done for a long time, and that is to try to humble a capitalist society and try to prove to the world that communism can be as strong. In other words, a government-run system can be as strong as an economically run system, and I think that this is a lot of this is about more or less about saving face for the ideology more than anything, and trying to humble the Americans, trying to humble a capitalist society by proving that a communist society can be strong and vibrant as well. But despite the fact that it's failed everywhere it's been tried.
Is North Korea trying to humble or humiliate the U.S. And capitalism, Professor Ross?
Well, I think there is an element of pride in the North Korean leadership. They've survived with their communist system. They were longer than Soviet Union, longer than East European countries. They would say longer than China, and they insist they will maintain that communist system. Having said that, I think they have much more humbler objectives of their own, much more limited objectives of their own, and that is to simply survive. They understand that their economy is bankrupt. They don't care, because to open it up to the world would expose their own regime to instability. They understand their own people are afraid of them. That's why they are so repressive and nasty to their own people. And they understand the United States' objective is to overthrow them. The Chinese government would like to overthrow them. The South Korean government would like to overthrow them. They all want a new government in North Korea. And so their ultimate objective and their priority right now is simply to survive in the case of American power. And that's what nuclear weapons are for. I think they would like to find a better system to keep themselves in power, but they're afraid of the alternatives. There are just too many countries in the world when they have opened up and tried to reform. The leadership has been beheaded, thrown in jail, exiled, and that's not a fate the North Korean leadership wants.
Yeah. So the President Trump has been wanting China to stick it to North Korea, yes. Or at least put some pressure on North Korea. What is China's role in all this?
Well, a number of things. First, the Chinese have, if you will, a lot more at stake in this than the United States does, because it's, after all, it's on their border. And should the North Koreans start a war and the Americans intervene, it would be a U.S. military presence and a U.S. war on Chinese borders. Mm-hmm. And so that makes them focus very much on the risks of the future compared to the present situation. Second, American calls for China to do more essentially require China to put sufficient pressure on the North Korean regime that it would collapse. Because we all know that's the only alternative. And if they were to collapse, well, that would be political instability, social instability, and again, perhaps war on their borders. And so the Chinese don't like this North Korean government. They don't want nuclear weapons on their border, but they think the risks of war would be greater in the future than they are now should we take steps to destabilize the government. And so, indeed, they look at what the United States is doing now, and they don't believe the United States is going to use nuclear weapons. And they see the president as creating his own problems here. And so in this immediate crisis, they've been standing on the sidelines and saying, you got yourself into this. You get yourself out of this. We told you need to talk to this regime, and you're not willing to do that. You just want to threaten war. We're not going to bail you out. Deal with this on your own.
You know, over the weekend, the UN Security Council unanimously approved additional sanctions on North Korea, which has kind of been foreshadowed by all of this talk now. But what might that do to remedy the situation?
Well, this is at least the third round of UN sanctions combined with America's unilateral sanctions, and they've been ineffective. Now, the reason they've been ineffective, again, is for two reasons. One, the North Korean leadership is insulated from these sanctions. They have all the luxuries they want. They have all the money they want. They have the foreign currency they want. And so these sanctions ultimately, if it weakens the economy, is going to make it more difficult for the North Korean people and not going to affect the North Korean leadership. And we know the North Korean leadership cares only about themselves rather than the North Korean people. And then second, again, over the years, we've seen this North Korean leadership determined at all costs to get nuclear weapons. And so we should not be under any illusion that another round of sanctions is going to change their mind. It's just not going to be effective. These sanctions may tell the world that we're determined to stop this, but I think the world also knows that this is going to be ineffective and we're not going to be able to stop this.
Let's go to George in Milwaukee now. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. I guess I need a little history lesson. I know that, you know, the Korean War ended in a stalemate, and perhaps the professor can help me on this. Was there, I don't think that there's ever been, like, any kind of a normalization of diplomacy between us and the North Koreans. Am I right in saying that they've never actually been, that we've never actually acknowledged that they are a nation by itself that has a right to exist? Might that go some way in assuaging the North Koreans to come to the table and be a little more reasonable about this, as well as maybe eventually signing on to some kind of eventual denuclearization of the entire Korean Peninsula, which I think they have said that they would be in favor of?
The Korean War, you're correct, ended with an armistice, not a peace agreement. We still do not have a peace agreement with North Korea. And you are correct, we do not have diplomatic relations or embassies or recognize their country. We recognize South Korea. So the question is, you know, if we were to reach a peace agreement or to have diplomatic recognition in North Korea, would it make a difference? Well, the North Koreans were quite opposed to the development of what we call cross-recognition. When the Chinese and the Soviet Union recognized South Korea, the North Koreans were very unhappy with that because that gave South Korea the same legitimacy as North Korea wanted. So for the South Koreans, for the North Koreans, that's not necessarily a breakthrough. But I go further than that. If we were to have a peace agreement with North Korea, and we were to have diplomatic relations with North Korea, and if we were to say that, you know, we recognize the right to your state to exist, would it affect North Korea's understanding of their security and how to defend their security? And the answer is likely no, because such agreements are not particularly valuable when states ask, is this country a threat to me or not? So, for example, the U.S. policy has changed under four different presidents. And if you thought President Obama's policy was American foreign policy, you'd be in for a shock when President Trump took office. And so you may sign a paper, but who's to say the next president doesn't change the policy and then next thing you know, you have gotten rid of your nuclear weapons and you're vulnerable to attack. And so what most countries do in these circumstances is they say, I'm not so confident in looking at what other countries say. I want to look at what they can do to hurt me. And North Korea looks around and sees South Korea, sees Japan, sees America, has no friends, a bankrupt economy, military, and says, we can't trust the goodwill of other countries. We must depend on our own military. And for them, that means nuclear weapons. So I don't believe these kind of assurances would do much to change the situation.
Yeah. Bill in Montello says, what if a mistake happens? What if North Korea shoots off missiles to show force, but instead of falling into the ocean, missiles fall on Guam? Is this an act of war?
Yes, this is what we all worry about. We understand that leaders on both sides don't want war, and they understand that war would be devastating and worse than the alternatives and worse than the present situation. But accidents do happen. Bad things can happen. They can happen in North Korea because of weak command and control. They could happen by miscalculation in each side feeling pressure to strike first rather than allow the other side to start a war. And the Korean Peninsula is particularly vulnerable to those kinds of pressures for war because the fear of first strike is so strong. So what people are saying today, what we hear in the media, is the fear of mistake, the fear of miscalculation, the fear of misperception to lead to devastating consequences. And that's one of the reasons we really hope that both sides can step back from this and de-escalate this tension. And, of course, that would require some degree of leadership on both sides, both in Washington and in North Korea.
Yeah. In our final moments here, How hopeful are you? What do you see happening with this right now war of words?
Well, I've been confident to now, and I'll be confident in the future. There will not be a war. Neither side wants a war. Both sides are finding it devastating. This is a war of words, and the likelihood of it escalating to a hot war are remote. Both sides need to find an exit. They need to find an off-ramp for this heightened tension. Prior administrations have found ways to do that. When both sides are ready, they'll know how to do this. Right now, the president's been relatively quiet since his last comments because I think he understands this escalated it to a point where even he didn't want it to go, again, reflecting his inexperience and not realizing how the other side might respond. And so perhaps his own quiet in the last day and a half might reflect an interest in de-escalation. I think we all hope so. No one wants war. No one expects war. You see, this is a war of words, but as your last caller suggested, accidents can happen, bad things can happen, and we will expect our leaders to minimize that, and we hope they're going to step back from the situation.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Robert Ross, professor of political science at Boston College. And thank you to Keely Boltina for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. We have much more to come, and I hope that you will tune in this afternoon as well, between 1 and 3, for the last Kathleen Dunn Show. Kathleen Dunn is retiring from Wisconsin Public Radio today, and she'll have a special last show as she says goodbye from 1 until 3 this afternoon on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Curtie.